listening to the Red Sea Podcast, part of the Over the Monster Network.
Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions.
Hosted by Jake Devereaux.
It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied. This game is tied. David Ortiz.
And featuring Keaton DeRosier.
It's a grand slam. I'm telling you.
Welcome to episode number 270 of the Red Seat Podcast. I am your host for this week, Bob Osgood, and I am joined by Jake Devereaux. Jake, what's going on? How's your spring training going so far?
I'm ramping up slowly right now. I'm still working on my 12-ounce curls. That's the big thing on today's agenda, so... Yeah, and also I'm in an unfamiliar seat. I'm not hosting today, so it's I'm switching up my roles too. I'm trying to add some versatility to my repertoire.
Absolutely, that's the story of the Red Sox at this point. You got to be able to fill multiple roles, and we called in the right-hander today, so I'm ready to go. Same thing. Kind of getting back into spring training, mixing in some college basketball. Watched my UNH Wildcats go down in the America East semifinals tonight, so that'll be a lifetime of me never being able to see my alma mater in the NCAA tournament. I've come to accept that, but the expectations were low as always.
It'll happen if you live long enough.
It's true, and I will be there storming the court at 75 years old when it happens. All right, we have a solid show ahead. We're going to talk about state of the rotation, you know, good and bad. We're going to talk about the lineup a little bit and some things that have changed and who our leadoff hitter could be in Boston and some other news and notes from the last 2 weeks since we last podcasted. You can follow me on Twitter at BobOsgood15. You can follow Jake at DevJake. And we have the email address, redseatpodcast@gmail.com, that we got a good question for to that email today. So we want to start off talking just about kind of, spring training. And Jake, what has been the most interesting development in your mind so far during spring training to date?
Well, you know, there hasn't been a ton of very interesting things on the hitter side for me. You know, I've been watching as much Yoshida as I can before he heads off to WBC. But other than that, like, there hasn't been a lot of excitement. Really, the most exciting thing for me and the most interesting development has been Chris Sale being fully healthy again. We all know what type of pitcher Chris Sale can be when he is healthy. And, seeing him toss two innings, throwing 96, and really working quickly and, you know, working in his different pitches. And, you know, we know that he has three above average offerings when he's right. That was pretty big. And I think that Chris Sale, just the way that he is speaking in interviews, seems more confident, seems more optimistic this year as well. And I think he's just jonesing to have a normal season. And I feel like, you know, I just keep getting tricked because I have gone all in on Sale coming back and being full strength the last couple of years, but, and I even picked him to be the best pitcher on the team last year. But I really do think, like, there's only so much that can happen to one guy. So I have a feeling that he's going to have a really big year. And I think we're seeing the start of that right now. And that can be transformative. We all know that the top of the line ace is the most important thing in baseball, really. I mean, that's the most premium position. I think it can be a real game changer to the rest of the rotation and really help this team win some games. And, you know, thinking about the ace too, it's not just like, yeah, obviously you can have a guy who goes out and gives you a chance to win 20 ball games, but, you know, it's also the mental side of things, knowing that hitters can have that day where they don't have to score a ton of runs when he's on the mound, or that stopper during a long losing streak, you know, all those different things that having an ace on the mound really provides. So I think it's going to be a huge lift for the club if he ends up really being himself.
Yeah, it was wild to see him walking off the mound with a big smile on his face yesterday. It was very un-Chris Sale-like in the typical competitive atmosphere from Sale, and I'm sure we won't see that in the regular season, but it was good to just kind of see him out there having fun. He talked in the postgame about being trying to be more relaxed, and you talked about the mental capacity with him. I mean, you went through a ton. You get hit with a comebacker, and that's got to be somewhere in the back of your head subconsciously, and having all the other things, and then coming off of Tommy John. And as we talked about a couple of times on this show, when he's been out there since having Tommy John, his ERA is 3.16, you know, in just 50 innings, but had a really good postseason outside of the Tampa Bay outing, but he had a good postseason appearance after that. So it's there. We've seen it. We've seen it in the last 2 years when he's been on the mound. It's just a matter of him being on the mound, which I'm still obviously not fully confident about. And, of course, we should all have our doubts since he hasn't pitched a full season since really 2018. He kind of broke down late in the 2019 season, and the writing was on the wall shortly after that. But it's there. He's only 33, soon to be 34, right? And we've seen some of these other pitchers that pitch into their late 30s. We saw what Justin Verlander did last year, even though I don't think he's quite got the 200-inning arm still in him. So, absolutely, I think that's a great call. Just we need to see an ace, and he is the one with the ace upside that has been presented before.
Yeah, definitely.
My takeaway, most interesting development so far, has been just the lack of urgency with the pitching staff to have anybody prepared for opening day. And I keep looking at the calendar and thinking, like, they realize that it's 3 weeks from now that they have to have five pitchers ready to be in an opening day rotation. And I'm not sure that everyone is aware of that, because as we know with James Paxton, who's had a similar injury history the last 4 years as Sale, he's already out with a hamstring injury. We've got Brian Bayo, who's limited to throwing bullpens and not really letting loose with his breaking stuff yet. And Garrett Whitlock, who could not participate in pitcher fielding practice until Monday, and he finally faced live hitters today, on Tuesday. You know, Nick Pivetta coming back from COVID, and it's just, we talked about in the last episode, there's seven pitchers. Is there seven? Is there two? Is there somewhere in between? And it just, the lack of urgency when I read the news and notes every day, you know, this person's throwing another bullpen, or they're still kind of holding them back. They're not going to face hitters yet. And then you realize that it's three, four starters that all have that at the same time. So it's just, I can't tell whether they realize that there are real games that are being played 3 weeks from Thursday.
Yeah. I get what you're saying. And, you know, last time we came on here and we were talking about this issue, I think it was Keaton who said, like, they've got, maybe it was five or six, I can't remember the number, he said, starting pitchers who are, like, essentially not healthy. And we got some flack from that from our listeners in the comments section, like, saying that we were being negative. But, like, really, were we being negative? Because, like, when I'm looking at this right now, Chris Sale, who hasn't pitched, as you said, for a long time, healthy, is projected to be healthy for opening day, as is Corey Kluber, who, you know, famously pitched his most innings in several years last year. And then Pivetta, dealing with the COVID stuff, looks like a shell of himself right now. Tanner Houck couldn't find the zone coming off of his back surgery. I mean, he did a little bit better today, but... And then you mentioned the other two guys projected to open the season on the IL, Paxton and Whitlock, as well as Bayo. I gotta say, I think we were right on this. I don't think we were being negative. I think we were being realistic. And unfortunately, like, that's just it. You know, looking at the rotation, you can definitely project Sale and Kluber to be there. And I think Pivetta will be there as well. Cutter Crawford is going to have to step into that role And he seems ready to do so. He looked good in his three-inning stint the other day. But yeah, I don't necessarily have a problem with the way that they're working these guys in, because like I said last week, I think these pitchers, because they all have something that they're dealing with, are going to trickle into the rotation. And I'd rather them do that in a way that's right and correct for their timeline than have like the best possible starting five to start the year. And especially because the Red Sox schedule opens up with like a pretty soft landing. You know, it's a pretty weak schedule for the first month or so of the season. I think it's okay to have your Cutter Crawfords in there and, like, you know, maybe a Nick Pivetta that's, like, not quite full strength. You know, that's okay for then. I wouldn't mind seeing a little bit of Josh Winkowski in there. But, you know, when the games start to really matter and the weather heats up and hitters start to get that advantage again, I think you're going to want to have all your guys healthy. So as long as they're being smart with these guys, I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, and I am by no means implying that they should be reckless or rushing any of these guys back. However, continuing to say that they are hopeful for opening day, we're expecting to have this guy back for opening day. I don't believe any of that. There's just simply not enough time for the majority of these pitchers to be back for opening day. So, Jake, you know, if you had to say the following five pitchers are going to pitch the first five games of the year in no particular order, what would be your list?
It'd be Sale, Kluber, Pivetta, Crawford, and Winkowski.
Okay.
I honestly think Hauk, having not looked quite as sharp as I want him to look, is going to open out of the bullpen. Interesting. And I wouldn't be shocked if he stays in the bullpen.
No, it wouldn't be shocking at all. I think they're doing the right thing, seeing what they have. But, you know, I think he gave up two runs in three innings again today. So he has probably three more opportunities to show and kind of get a little more length for five innings. And maybe that's something that they do temporarily, but I could see what you're saying there as well. I went with Sale, Kluber, Pivetta, Hauk, and Crawford, which I think is probably what will happen, but I wrote on Monday on the Over the Monster site about Brandon Walter a little bit, and he's kind of my dark horse in that I think that he will, it's more likely that he'll pitch out of the bullpen this year, but it also wouldn't shock me if he continues to just kind of roll through and get built up to four or five innings and maybe make a couple of starts, whether that's early in the season or midway through the season. But his strikeout to walk ratio are crazy. I mean, in the 50 double A innings he threw last year, he had three walks and 68 Ks. And there's just something to be said for pounding the strike zone, and he has pitched well, albeit mostly against minor leaguers in his relief outings. But he's, you know, I think he threw in the middle innings the other day. It wouldn't shock me if Walter got some run this year now that he's 26. You know, he had two outings at AAA, but it was right before he had a bulging disc in his back that ended his season. So I think it's kind of hard with those being his only two outings, and then he missed the rest of the year, to look at those. He was so good in AA and did the same thing in A ball the year before. You know, obviously the age is, he should he be dominating? Yes. But once you get to AA at 25, you know, he missed a year during the COVID season, and he was a college pitcher. So, you know, the prospect growth isn't linear, and as a 26-year-old, I think that they might be willing to give him some run. So that's kind of my dark horse starter this year.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I love Brandon Walter, and I loved what I saw from him last year. I get to see one of his better starts of the season in Portland. And, you know, I really think that, like, when I'm projecting out starting pitcher depth and I'm looking down at the possible names that could fill in, I think Walter is definitely going to be called up ahead of guys like Mata or Chris Murphy. And so as long as they are dealing with injuries like this, I think, you know, Winkowski has probably the leg up on him just because he has the major league innings. But I actually think that, you know, if you're looking for ceiling and impact, Walter has a higher ceiling and impact than Josh Winkowski, and I think it's kind of arguable whether or not he has a higher ceiling even than Cutter Crawford at this point. So it wouldn't shock me if he got a lot of run this year, and it wouldn't shock me if he opens up next year as like a fourth or fifth starter for this team. That's kind of how much I think of him. When I was writing my relief pitcher preview, I didn't even include him as a possible lefty out of the pen because I just think he's too damn valuable starting pitching depth. He really has a starter's repertoire, so I truly believe in Walter as well, and as long as he can stay healthy, yeah, that's a great option to have.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I do think if they have five healthy starters that I would still rather he be in Boston as a relief arm, at least at some point, rather than having him at AAA. But there are a lot of arms. I know your boy Ryan Brazier still around, and there's an exciting article that came out in The Athletic today about Ryan Brazier and how his ERA and expected ERA weren't the same and what they saw in September, and we'll see whether that works out. Maybe Brandon Walter slides into back end of the bullpen if there isn't a rotation spot for him this year.
Did you catch TC on the broadcast asking Verdugo who has the worst style on the team, and him just absolutely going to town on the choices, the wardrobe choices that Ryan Brazier makes?
I did not.
It was wonderful. Just like, sure, no matter the occasion, he says he dresses in like a crappy polo shirt, shorts, and flip-flops, which is just, that's exactly how I think Ryan Brazier would roll up to any occasion. Like, it could be Golden Corral, it could be a funeral, it could be anything, and I'm convinced Ryan Brazier rolls up in the same thing.
You don't think Alex Verdugo rolls up in the...
I think Verdugo's got some real flair. I think sometimes he takes it a little too far. Like, I think sometimes he wears a full sombrero to, like, 7-Eleven and stuff like that. But, you know, I think he knows how to look good on a Friday night.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm going to have to seek out this clip because I would love to see that.
Well, that's good. It's worth your time.
All right. We do have an email question that we wanted to get to fairly early in the show. It's from Mark. He says, "Hey, guys, love the pod. I'm still very curious to see what this lineup is going to look like, especially now that Cora has said he's going to separate Yoshi and Devers. The big question being, who leads off? Does Verdugo lead off against right-handed pitching? Or do you think they'll avoid three out of four lefties at the top? Wondering what you guys think. Thanks." Jake, we had talked a couple weeks back about that, about the possible lineup, but some things have kind of changed. Some quotes have come out since that time. So what do you think? Do you think Verdugo could be an option to lead off? And where do you, I guess kind of specifically with the left-handers, is the left-handed hitters more being the question, where do you think they'll slot in the lineup this year?
Well, Cora's also been vocal about the fact that he doesn't mind going lefty-lefty in this lineup. He had some quote about, like, how many more right-handed pitchers they are, and I think he's got a point. I mean, in especially with the fact that teams are going to be limited to 13 pitchers and, you know, all these new rules about how many batters a pitcher has to face and stuff like that, I think it's less risky to stack lefties. So I do think a lefty will lead off, and the real question to me is whether that's going to be Verdugo or Casas, or if they go for a righty, I think it could be Kike in some circumstances. But I think those are really the only three options in my mind. If I had to put money on it, I think that the team, if they're happy with the way Verdugo is swinging the bat, I think he makes the most sense, especially considering that they intend to hit Yoshida in the four spot, it seems. They've been impressed with his power. That's where he's kind of hit in Japan with the Oryx Buffaloes. And I don't know how fair it is to a guy like Casas, who's kind of new to this, to be in that spot. And he's a bit of a lumbering oaf too. I mean, he came in better shape too. So I'm not ragging on the dude, but he's still a first baseman, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, baseball purists would kind of balk at the idea of a 6'5 first baseman being your leadoff guy. It's not exactly speed on the base path. So when I think of it, it makes sense that it's Verdugo. So I think they will go lefty-lefty, and I would bet on Verdugo getting the most run there at this point.
I think you make a good point about the new rules and just kind of how overblown going two consecutive lefties is in the lineup at this point, because if you bring in a lefty, I guess if there was one out and they were only facing two hitters, that they would face two straight lefties, but if they have to face three hitters, then it's lefty-lefty-righty as opposed to lefty-righty-lefty. What's the difference, right? Especially when you have guys that aren't striking out a ton, people that put the ball in play, and if Yoshida is part of that in a three out of four at the top, if he's striking out, you know, 10% of the time or something ridiculous because of his bat control, then who really cares? And I don't think that we worry about Devers facing left-handers.
One more thing on that though.
Yeah.
Just to add to the Alex Verdugo stuff, you know, he's a guy who hasn't really had drastic platoon splits in his career, whereas Casas has, at least to this point. So I think that that's another thing that really plays in his favor. Like, I don't really care about the lefty righty thing if you can hit both lefties and righties. But if you've shown a true platoon split, that's when you have to start to think about, like, yeah, if we're facing a lefty, or if a lefty's going to come in, like, is that going to screw things up? And with Verdugo, I don't think it is.
I agree. I think the three lefties that I'm referencing are Verdugo, Devers, and Yoshida, and I think that they all could handle that.
Totally, yeah.
I agree with Casas not being in that mix. And he, both of his home runs are off lefties in the spring, you know, even though they're minor league lefties, I think.
Yeah.
So he could get to that point, but he needs to show that.
Right.
And I think that against a left-hander, I could see Enrique Hernandez at the top. The more I've looked at this, especially if Yoshida is not leading off, I think just Devers in the two-hole, I think this era of kind of hitting your best hitter there second makes a lot of sense. So I'm kind of starting to get sold on that idea. You know, changing my tune a little bit from our podcast about a month ago when I was going through it in my head. But, you know, I think that there was something to that with Yoshida not feeling comfortable leading off. And then all of a sudden, I don't know what Cora's exact quote, but almost like he, you know, wished he hadn't said some it a certain way, or that his quote might have been wrong. And then it was like, oh, they're backing off on Yoshida leading off, and maybe he'll hit fourth. He doesn't really seem... We'll see if he's has enough power to be the traditional cleanup hitter, but
30 home run season incoming from Yoshida. Here we go. 30 home runs, 120 ribbies.
Yeah.
There you go.
There it is.
Yeah. What everybody expected.
Exactly. And in terms of a name that was going to be able to provide some sort of insurance behind these lefties in some sort of order. Justin Turner hit in the face with a pitch on Monday, which was one of the scarier scenes that you can really ever see. I mean, I talked at the beginning about Sale needing to overcome getting hit with a line drive. Imagine getting hit in the face with a pitch from Manning on Detroit the other day. He was evaluated for a concussion, and it sounded like he ended up very lucky with 16 stitches and no fractures, and is in, you know, sitting comfortably in the hospital at this point. So it sounds like he avoided a catastrophe, which is good. Obviously, you know, ugly scene, Jake, but seems like Turner, while we don't know how long he'll be out and who knows how that will affect him mentally when he gets back into the box, did you have any thoughts kind of on that and possible trickle down at first base, you know, if he is not available for opening day?
Yeah, I have a couple thoughts on this. I mean, I just wonder how it will impact him when he does come back, and whether or not he'll be wearing a C-flap when he does come back. I'd expect he probably will. And then, you know, whether or not that impacts him. I think we saw it impact Giancarlo Stanton for a while. So, you know, there's not too much more runway left in Justin Turner's career. So you hope that he can bounce back from this and it not be a mental hurdle for him, and he can still have a good year. But the person I think that benefits from this, and it's kind of dark to say anybody benefits from this, best wishes to Turner. I hope he recovers soon. But Bobby Dalbec is really the guy I think of who's going to benefit from this situation in these added at-bats, because that's been the guy that when roster projections have been coming out, nobody can find room for Bobby Dalbec on this team. And the fact that he can play the corners like Turner can, and the fact that he, you know, can hit a little bit, at least against, you know, righties, that's good for him. So we'll see if that leads to Bobby Dalbec playing time, but I think it can.
Yeah, I think that is probably the answer. I think the other name that at least has played some first base is Yu Chang as a backup to that, if something happened to either Cassis or Dalbec in addition to Turner. You know, they don't have a whole lot of depth, if any, in the minor leagues, in the high minors. You know, it's not like Nico Cavadas is knocking down the door just yet. But I do think they have depth with major league experience between Cassis and Dalbec and Chang and Turner. So that's one area that I think that it isn't a killer. If they had an injury in the middle infield after everything that we've seen, then they might be in trouble.
Yeah, I think I should correct my narrative a little bit here. I accidentally said Bobby Dalbec can hit righties. I meant that he can hit lefties, but I think that could factor in with Cassis as well. Like you were saying, you know, Cassis we know can hit righties, and Dalbec being able to crush lefties and has shown that consistently, you know, that could be a good little platoon to work in a little bit.
Yeah, and Dalbec, you know, we've seen it before, but he's entering play on Tuesday 6-for-17 with 6 runs and 1 home run. So he has been said that he's been trying to make some adjustments in the offseason, which, of course, he should. And a couple weeks ago, looking up kind of what I had written, but to your point about left-handers, he has a 268 career average against lefties, and that was just 240 in 2022, but 268 in his career. And it's even better at home. So he's hit 292 in his career at home against lefties, and that's in 83 games. So I know that's getting very, like, granular, but I don't think that that's a bad fallback. And I think if he is in a pretty good groove in spring training, that there's a possibility that he could be. I mean, we saw it late in the year. It's there somewhere late in the year in 2021. So I'm not ruling out a Bobby Dalbec resurgence, although I would certainly not predict it by any means.
No Ryan Fitzgerald love for this roster?
I'm trying to remember. It was a great start to the season, good spring last year, right? And then I think it kind of fell apart a little bit. What do you think?
Nah, I don't think it's a possibility, but yeah. You know, it's always fun to see him just hit tanks in spring training. He is he's about as good as it gets in spring training.
Yes. there's a few of those guys. Absolutely.
Well, let me throw one more dark horse name at you though. Yeah. Enmanuel Valdez has looked pretty good. Definitely looks hitterish. And there have been some comments about how his setup and his load kind of looks a little Soto-like. I'm not going to make that comparison. I think it's silly. But
thank you.
I did see him hit a tank in the spring, and I thought to myself, this guy does look like he can hit a little bit. So
it's there.
He's not the best fielder, but he is versatile. He can fake it at second and third. Probably fake it and left. I don't hate the idea of him on the roster instead of Dalbec.
No, and he has 6 walks to 5 strikeouts, so a little bit of plate discipline in the early goings. You're right, he is fun to watch hit, and that swing, the load up, everything, he just looks like a hitter. So maybe he's a year away. But I definitely have liked what I've seen there. And there easily could be an emergency situation at second base with what we've already seen with Mondesi out, and, you know, just the trickle down of who would move around when Mondesi is back, with Story and with Christian Arroyo, and as much as we like Christian Arroyo around here, until we see him out there for 6 full months, you know, believe it when I see it. So I think we could even see him at second base, you know, in the first half of the season, depending on when, if and when Trevor Story comes back this year. So I wouldn't rule him out at first. I wouldn't rule him out at second. And I think that he's definitely one of the few to keep an eye on the hitter side of things for the rest of spring training. It's a good call.
Definitely. You know what I find myself doing in the spring, though, when I'm watching these games is because I've been deprived of baseball for so long. I'm focusing on the littlest stuff, man. Like, I'll be watching how a guy, like, looks at balls in the zone, and, like, I don't know. I was just impressed by everything I saw from Manuel Valdez. He was spitting on pitches out of the zone. Just looked real mean in the box.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just like
confidence there.
Yeah, he's confident. He's very confident.
Yep. Absolutely. Another confident hitter, Jorge Alfaro, who we've talked about a little bit. Connor Wong is hamstring injury, questionable for opening day. And I know Alfaro is leaving to go to the World Baseball Classic, but he has been on fire before he's heading out. 7-for-10 so far in spring training, and hit really well in the winter leagues that we were referencing some highlights from. Does have a $2 million bonus if he makes the opening day roster, which actually Raimel Tapia has as well. And according to at Red Sox payroll on Twitter, current projections have the Red Sox at 7 to 8 million below the CBT line. They're currently at approximately 225 and a half million. So the thing there, as we've talked about Tapia, we've talked about Alfaro, and Tapia has a, you know, can elect to become a free agent if he's not on the opening day roster, whereas Alfaro has, I think, can opt out on maybe June 1st, but I think Tapia's is earlier. I don't know, Jake, it seems like both of these guys on paper could break camp, and maybe a better chance of that happening with the Connor Wong injury. Do you see one or both of these on the opening day roster?
I think both of them will be, honestly. You know, when I think about that last outfield spot, it's kind of between Tapia and Duran. And I like Tapia for that position. At this point, I just think he's more ready. And I know that Duran has changed his swing yet again. I'd like to see him have, you know, more success with that swing and then kind of come up later if he needs to. But Tapia, you know, he did a lot of damage against the Red Sox last year. I think he's a pretty good hitter. I think he fits more in that role. And when it comes to Alfaro, even if Wong was healthy, I liked Alfaro for that second spot. And I like the idea of Wong starting in AAA because I want to preserve as much of that depth as possible. So yeah, I'm hoping that both of these guys break camp with the team, and I'm especially bullish on Alfaro's role with this team, even in a short side of the platoon role.
Yeah. And I kind of struggle with this. I feel like if Connor Wong is back and he's ready for opening day, that Alfaro, that they're just going to add some flexibility, both with the payroll and buying more time to make a decision on him. But I think if Connor Wong is not, I think it's an obvious move. And the only thing about that, when I saw that both of them had a $2 million bump, and that brings it closer to $3 million under the CBT, and then we know that they're going to stay below that with this roster unless something wild happens and they feel the need to go all in, which I'm not predicting. So that is my only kind of hesitation there, is that if they get within $3 million, then they don't really have any wiggle room. You know, any trades that you make at the deadline, you'd have to send a prospect back and have the other team, you know, eat the money on their side to not reach that. So, you know, you can play some games with it, but I think adding that $4 million was something that I saw today that I wasn't aware of. Otherwise, I would have said, you know, it was pretty much a no-brainer for both of them.
I like the joke you just made there, Bob. Unintentional, too.
Did I?
Heim Bloom making impactful moves at the deadline. That's funny. That is funny.
Kyle Schwarber.
I wouldn't sweat that $3 to $4 million that they're going to have after adding these two guys. They're not doing shit at the deadline.
Kyle Schwarber.
This is the team that they have. So yeah. If you're going to see additions, it's going to be guys like Valdez or Wong coming up. You're not going to see any splashes. Yeah. Don't get excited, people.
Those reinforcements.
This is a Red Sox podcast.
Those reinforcements.
Think this is a Rays podcast?
Are probably needed now, considering what we've seen, and you know, in the preseason and yesterday with Turner and with Wong and with Paxton. I mean, we couldn't even begin to try to put 26 names on paper right now and predict a roster. You know, across my mind, do we start trying to do that today? There's no way. I mean, half the team is either unknown or significantly injured or slightly injured or you know, taking off for the World Baseball Classic, where they're going to be playing at full strength when they haven't had enough time to stretch yet. And I'm sure three more Red Sox players will get hurt in the next 2 weeks while they're out there. So, you know, it's really hard to even try to predict and put a roster on paper at this point with all of this unknown. I think it's as difficult as any Red Sox team that I can remember.
Do you think we could go down to Encore and, like, get them to put odds on us correctly predicting the Red Sox 26-man lineup?
I mean, I'd be willing to find out.
Yes. Okay. Field trip.
A couple more questions before we get to one Twitter question. Adalberto Mondesi, still limited to taking batting practice and ground balls only as he rehabs from an ACL tear. So we talked about some of the pitching unknowns at the beginning, but there is one more from Mondesi. And, you know, taking batting practice and ground balls is the equivalent of, you know, not doing PFPs and not facing hitters yet from the batter side of things. And in terms of, I guess I'll kind of start expectations for Mondesi this season. You know, I think that if I had to guess how many games that he played, if I had to set like an over-under, I would put it around maybe 70. Would you take the over or the under on that, Jake?
It's a good number. Yeah, 70 is a real good number. I'm gonna, because of the proximity of like the season and sort of where he is in his rehab, I think that he will be over 70, but I don't think by a lot. Because I'm sure something will happen to him once he's back up here. Yeah, let's say, I'm going to guess over, and I'm going to say slightly over. I'm going to say he ends the year with 82 games played.
Okay. I'm going under. 15 games in 2022, 35 games in 2021. He did play the whole short season in 2020, 59 out of 60 games, so hang on to that. 102 the season before that. 75 the season before that. So I guess if you averaged all of that out, probably be in that 60 to 70 range. In terms of expectations, I mean, he has run wild when he's been on the field. He had 24 steals in the short season in 59 games, which is a crazy pace. He had 43 steals the year before. And he had an average of 260 in those two seasons. So it's there, and he did it at 23 and 24 years old. So I can understand why, you know, there's some tantalizing upside there of somebody that can hit for a decent average and play great defense and run wild. And that's not a name that we've talked about hitting leadoff, because his on-base percentage and his walk rate has been absolutely atrocious for his whole career. But he could settle into a nine spot and even be like a second leadoff type of hitter. You know, if you start at nine and have Mondesi get on base and Verdugo behind that, and then Devers hitting third in an inning, I can see how that would work. But I'm just not going to bet on it at Encore with you.
We'll see. We'll see how many Mai Tais you have. that might make you bet on it. But, you know, to the Mondesi point, Chad Jennings wrote an article about watching his BP and just kind of the tantalizing raw talent that's there, and the injuries have definitely been the thing that hampers him, but this is the type of guy who really is a true five-tool guy, and the type of player that if he was probably drafted in 1980 or something, if we reverse the clock, he'd probably go 1-1 with the tools that he has. He's just very physical. He's very gifted. So if he can put it all together, I think it does have the potential to be a really impactful guy for this Red Sox team. But, you know, snowball's chance in hell of all those things coming together in one season.
Yep. All goes back to article we talked about a couple weeks ago, that they're the most volatile, the largest disparity between their high-end projections and their low-end projections that Chad Jennings and Eno Saris worked on. And I don't think we needed a study to tell us that. I think we probably already knew that coming in, but it validated what we believed and had talked about plenty in the weeks leading up to that. And then one more question for you here. The Red Sox are, and after winning on Tuesday night here, they are 8-0-3 in spring training. How much does this matter to you, Jake?
I think it matters a little bit, especially for this being a team where the narrative has been so overwhelmingly negative. I think that it matters for relationship building. There's a whole lot of new faces in this clubhouse. I mean, Casas is going to have a full-time role. He didn't exactly get along swimmingly with the veterans last year like we talked about last episode. Turner's new, Yoshi's new, Verdugo's looking to prove himself. Kike wasn't really a huge part of this last year. I mean, there's a lot of meshing that needs to take place, and I think if these guys can have a really good spring and get some good vibes going, that can carry over to the season. And you know, I think clubhouse chemistry is one of the most underrated aspects of this game. You're with these guys more than you're with your own family. You know, you're playing 162 plus spring training. And I mean, these guys become your family. So if they can create those good vibes now, I think that's huge for the season. I don't necessarily think it's predictive of wins and losses, but I think for a team that's as volatile as the Red Sox, that this can only help get to the positive side of that volatility.
I think that you hit on most everything there. If they were 0-8-3, I'm sure a year ago when they were under 500, it's spring training, so I'm sure I've had some sort of hypocritical take, but I think your point is well taken, that there is a new group that's here. And they're all kind of getting to know each other. And I do think that there's bringing in all of those ex-Dodgers players who have been winners for their entire career. I mean, we heard Kike being very vocal about how pissed off he was that this was the first season in whatever 8 years that he had not played in the playoffs. And bringing in Justin Turner, bringing in Kenley Jansen, Chris Martin, who had been with the Dodgers last year. You know, those are four ex-Dodgers who have won a lot, and they're all veterans, and I think that there are veterans that are no longer in the clubhouse, and specifically Xander Bogaerts, that we wish were there, and then there's other ones that it's probably for the best. I agree with a lot of what you said there, that it's a new group and they're trying to kind of figure things out, and it cannot hurt. It certainly can't hurt. Probably just matters a little bit when they get swept by the Orioles. I'll be singing a different tune in 4 weeks, but
and Franchi hits a grand slam. Franchi's raking in the spring with the Orioles. Do you know that?
You don't say. Who has he faced? A bunch of AAA pitchers in the sixth and seventh innings.
His quality of opposition is actually quite high right really? Now. So yeah. He's in one of his hot streaks. It means absolutely nothing, people. Go about your business.
I'm not shocked that Franchi is hot in March, to answer your question. but what is it? Baltimore, Pittsburgh, and Detroit to open the season. So I think there's going to be a lot of subpar right-handed pitchers that the Red Sox left-handers and really the whole lineup should be able to feast on. So hopeful that they can roll this undefeated record in the preseason into the first 9 or 10 games to just get out to a good start and hopefully keep those positive vibes going.
Three places that had roaring economies in the 1920s, too.
Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Detroit?
Yep, there you go.
All right. Name the three rivers of Three River Stadium. Twitter question. TJ McPhee asks us, hey guys, who are the relatively unknown Sox prospects who you see taking a big leap this year? I have a couple of thoughts. And relatively unknown can be a really wide scale of unknown, you know, lower levels or low in prospect rankings. So take this however you'd like, Jake.
I have three names. Three names that came to mind when I thought about this. My first name and my highest ranked name was Elmer Cruz Rodriguez, a right-handed pitcher that the Red Sox drafted in 2021 in the fourth round. Out of Puerto Rico, I think he's got a lot of potential. He's probably going to be starting at Salem this year. He's only 19 years old. I could see big things from him. You know, definitely a riser. Next guy for me is Jedickson Paez, right-handed pitcher, also 19 years old, international free agent in 2021. Doesn't throw that hard, but, you know, is a real pitcher. You can hear the Sox prospects guys wax poetically about the type of pitcher intelligence that he has. So if the stuff can tick up, I could see Paez really jumping in the rankings. And then the third one that I'll give you is Freddy Encarnacion, one of the big hitters that they signed out of the Dominican Republic in 2021. He's probably going to start at the FCL this year. I would be shocked if he doesn't end up in Salem real quick, though. Just a really good hitter, lots of power. He could be the next really big riser in terms of Red Sox hitters, the next sort of impact guy, kind of like Miguel Blaise. I don't think he's quite at that level, but I think that he could be, you know, the next big hitter coming up.
All right, I like it, and I'm shocked that you didn't take either of my names, so that's a win.
There you go.
I went with Luis Perales, who I thought was a hot take that I was going to be able to say would go, you know, way up the prospect rankings. And I think on most prospect rankings that would be a hot take, except Sox Prospects has put him at 10 this year, which was just a meteoric rise, which I don't disagree with, but, you know, I love the... you know, what they went with there. And Perales, who, when he signed at 16, I remember reading that he had like a mid to high 90s fastball that he was already kind of throwing on backfields. And, you know, there was just different reports that came out early on in the pandemic. And then you didn't really hear from him. I think he threw two innings in 2021, pitched a little bit more in 2022 at Salem. Well, he was in, you know, rookie ball, and then at Salem combined 35 innings, but had some really good K rates. He had 50 strikeouts in those 35 innings. He had great ERAs, and you know, he tops out at 99, but has an advanced curveball and has just very good off-speed stuff. Like, you know, his changeup is developing, and if he can develop a changeup, you know, he's just 19, but... And he's probably going to start in Salem, but he kind of just has all the tools and just an electric fastball that he has had since the age of 16. That I would love to see Perales kind of make a jump this year and maybe get even to double A during his 20-year-old season. And then my other one is Ryan Fernandez, another arm and another hard throwing arm, kind of same thing. He throws 96 to 98 and he tops out at 99, but he is somebody who... I think, you know, we could see in the next year or so, potentially, as a reliever. I mean, you can throw a whole group in there between Caleb Ort and Zach Kelly and some of the other arms that they've traded for that they did not let go in return for keeping, you know, or in return for Thad Ward being let go and all of that, that happened around the Rule 5 draft. But, you know, Fernandez could be in that group and throws hard, and has a good cutter and decent slider. And, you know, he got hurt kind of towards the end of the year, and I think that kind of sounds like that kept him from maybe being known or a team being willing to grab him in a Rule 5 draft. So those are two arms of much different ages and potential. I think Perales has the potential as a starter and Fernandez more of a reliever that I think could rise up this year.
Yeah, I think those are awesome names, and I fully endorse everything you said with those two guys. And I also want to point out here that it's pretty cool that when we gave five names, four of them were pitchers.
Yes.
Because that is just not something that we would have said with this system at any point over the last 10 years. So that's great.
I agree. Well said. Anything else? Anything I'm forgetting, Jake? We got through it.
I don't think so. I think, you know, we're just going to keep our nose to the grindstone here with spring training and, you know, hopefully you guys get through it healthy. I hope everybody out there enjoys the WBC. That gets started tonight as we're recording this, so that'll be fun. Get some early baseball. I know, Bob, you'll be focusing on that March Madness, but I hope you get to sneak in a couple games.
Yeah, I'm going to check in. And there's probably a better chance that I check in on some of those games that might have a wild atmosphere and, you know, the winner and the loser actually matters. I struggle with preseason in really all sports. You know, I'm interested in the stories, but sitting and watching a preseason game of any sport, you know, it can be a grind sometimes. So I'll definitely be checking in on a lot of those games, you know, in between commercials for the March Madness. So. All right, you can follow me at BobOsgood15. You can follow Jake at DevJake. And we usually have Keaton on. He's at The Spoken Keats. You can email us at redseatpodcast@gmail.com. We've read an email question each of the last couple of episodes, so please keep those coming. And we're going to be back pretty much every week from here on out. So we will talk to you soon.